Welcome to the second part of this RCGP podcast on gambling, which is part of a wider course that includes four e-learning modules. I'm Dr. Tony Hazel, GP and Deputy Medical Director for e-learning at the RCGP. Today, I'll be talking to Dr. Emma Ryan, GP partner and clinical lead at the Primary Care Gambling Service. Building on what was discussed last time, today we're going to cover a bit more practical detail about what can be done in primary care. Thank you for joining us today, Emma.
Thank you for having me.
So we talked last time about how medical education is a bit lacking in this area, and I hope that listeners will do our e-learning modules to try and improve their knowledge. In general, what do you think primary care should be doing for these patients?
So at the moment, what we know is that only 3% of those suffering gambling harms are in treatment. So what would be really good is if we could encourage healthcare professionals to think about gambling harms and be able to identify them. The next step would be able to support them into the appropriate service. So also to be aware that there is treatment and support out there. Often gambling is thought of as a hidden addiction, as it doesn't have the physical sequelae of alcohol or substance misuse. So what is really important is to think about it in certain consultations. And this may be in consultations with patients who present with symptoms of mental illness, so anxiety, depression, or acute stress in those that present with non-specific symptoms. Commonly, insomnia, even high blood pressure can be a sign that something is going on that is stressing them. And we want people to think about gambling in these situations. So there isn't an ask for every GP to become an expert in managing gambling harms, but there is an ask to be able to identify it and then have knowledge of where to send an individual.
Yes, as with everything, if we don't think about it, then we won't find it. So I'm in my surgery, it's a busy Monday morning. How might I spot a patient who's suffering gambling harms?
Speaking to those who have suffered gambling harms that have gone to the GP, they felt that there was never an appropriate moment to bring it up. So the simplest thing is to be aware of it and then just ask about it. Just as we ask patients in consultation, do you smoke? Do you drink alcohol? How much? Do you use recreational drugs? We also want to add on there, and do you gamble? There's no set way that this question has to be asked. It just has to be asked. And what we've found in the workshops that we've been involved with is that no one would be offended by being asked that question. They would just say no. But if they were asked, that would really open up a door for them. And so that is the main thing, is to ask a simple question. The other thing is to consider who is presenting with gambling harms. So we've talked about in the last podcast, young people, those suffering mental illness, but also in those with chronic disease. Anyone that has been housebound for a long time has become lonely, and we've found that they have had an increased use of online gambling. So that's another group of people to think about when you're in consultation. And as I said before, not just the mental illness symptoms, but also non-specific physical symptoms as well.
Yes, that's a very good point, I think, about those who are housebound with largely having the internet for company. So let's say I ask about gambling and it turns out that it's a significant issue for the person. I think my worry would be that I've opened up the issue and I'm not sure that I know what to do next.
Yes, and I think that's very common. I think that's what most GPs would think. And also, you know, how far do you delve into the detail of the gambling? And actually, would you understand nuances of the gambling they talk about? So I think there are some basic principles to stick to, and that is to look at the patient holistically. And yes, of course, you're going to talk about the gambling, and it might be as simple as, you know, how is this affecting, so that you are able to highlight the gambling harms. So is it affecting their mental health? Are they in debt? Are they suicidal even. These are all things to assess on this first assessment, but it can be done quite quickly in that what you're thinking about is the gambling harms, and then think about their safety. So are there any adult safeguarding issues? So we sometimes see affected others present who are being bullied by one of their children to give them money, and that's becoming quite emotionally abusive, and at times physical abuse can take place as well. So always think about safeguarding, think about children. Is there enough food at home for heating? Does the person in front of you need food vouchers to feed their children? So the immediate problems that may be affecting them. But once you've established that they're safe, then you are really looking at signposting them on into treatment and support. We're not asking people to hold them and solve the problem within primary care.
That's reassuring. And we're going to talk in a minute about the different levels of treatment available. But in medicine, we do like things that can be measured and can give us numbers. Are there any useful rating scales that we can apply in primary care without the need for specialist knowledge?
Yes, so for those that want to do a little bit more, there is a problem gambling severity index, the PGSI tool, and there's also links on this in our gambling harms hub. Now, this is a tool widely used in the UK by treatment services to look at the consequences and the severity of a person's gambling. So there are 9 questions, and you can get a score of between 0 to 27, and anything higher than 8 indicates severe consequences from gambling and a loss of control. 3 to 7 is a moderate level of problems. It does have its limitations because you could have someone that scores a 3, so, you know, has a moderate level of problems from their gambling, but actually they could be in a very complex situation. They could be homeless. They could be experiencing a safeguarding issue. So it doesn't allow you to only use it on its own to assess severity of harms in an individual. So in most treatment providers, we also do the core 10. At the primary care gambling service, we use Cyclops, which is more of a qualitative tool, and it looks more on what the person suffering gambling harms might want to achieve if they were to give up gambling. So it could be as simple as, I would like to use this money to go on holiday. And we use this to help guide them through treatment and look at that as an outcome at the end after treatment.
So how would I go about signposting someone to support if we imagine maybe 2 patients, one who's mildly affected and one with more severe gambling harms? Would I send them to different places?
The overwhelming message is to say that there is treatment and support services out there. There will be ones local to where you work. I think these are the ones that you should reach out to first if there is a low or moderate issue with the patient. These are normally run within the voluntary sector, and they are able to do an assessment and to advise the next step. And if they felt that your patient needed more input, they would then refer on to a more specialised service. But they have a huge role in outreach work in the local community. And if someone is suffering from a moderate level of gambling harm or a low level, then to have your care local to where you live, I think, is really, really important. The second place that you can access help is through the primary care gambling service. This is a GP-led service based in London. However, we support the voluntary sector across the UK, so that if they have someone who they are managing for their gambling but may have some complex medical issue that they need some input with or some advice on what to do next, then they would also be referred to us. This service also takes referrals direct from GPs, and also patients can self-refer. So we sit between the voluntary sector and secondary care NHS services. So the NHS Long Term Plan aims to have 15 clinics opened by the end of 2024, and currently 7 are open all over the country, and they can be accessed in person or in remotely. And you would refer directly to an NHS specialist clinic if someone had severe mental illness Or often you meet individuals who have been around the treatment system, either in the voluntary sector previously, and they have relapsed. And often you think, well, you've had the standard treatment, I think let's just put you straight to an NHS clinic to get the support you need. And finally, there is residential care. This is through the voluntary sector charity called Gordon Moody, where patients can go and stay in a residential setting and receive therapy. This is particularly important for people who have lost everything. So it's quite hard to receive therapy if you're homeless or your relationship has broken down and you don't have a job. So this can really provide a great source of stability for someone to receive therapy. They are also linked to a charity called Adferiad, which has a consultant attached to them and an inpatient facility. And Gordon Moody will reach out to them and look after patients that may need detoxification from alcohol or substances before they go into the Gordon Moody residential setting. So the short answer is that there's lots of options. And if it is not considered a high-risk patient, then use your local voluntary sector services. But if there is more concern, then you have the primary care gambling service and you have the secondary care clinics as well.
That's great to know that there are so many different things available. At the point of referral, the patient might ask their GP what they can expect after they're referred, particularly if they're a bit nervous about accessing this help. How could I answer that question?
Everybody that works in this sector for gambling really does want to help. So that's the first thing to say. And it is really, I think, heartwarming for people that go to these services because they finally feel listened to and they're being listened to people that understand the harms they're going through. So a holistic approach will be taken because, as we mentioned, there are physical, social, psychological needs that need to be met. Often, especially for patients that have relapsed again and again, they could have some undiagnosed mental illness or intellectual disability, or often ADHD might be a theme that comes through. You're talking to somebody. And again, this is helpful because then you realize they haven't been able to do routine therapy and sit and do treatment for long periods of time. So they might just need short slots at a time that works for them in a way that works for them. So it's a real detailed exploration of their story and what's happened to them. So as well as the harms around money, relationships, work, the option of treatment will also be discussed. The main treatment is cognitive behavioral therapy, and that can be down to patient choice, whether that's done individually or as a group. But the evidence is that group therapy is as good as individual therapy, and that's normally about 8 to 10 sessions. In some cases, when you assess individuals, they've had a huge amount of childhood trauma, and then it decided to move them on, they probably would benefit for a more detailed treatment with psychotherapy. And that would be up to 20 to 24 sessions. So real chance to do some real work to change their course in life. I will mention naltrexone. This is an off-licensed medicine for gambling. It's an opioid antagonist that's often used to reduce cravings in those suffering with alcohol addiction. And it has been used to block the urge in those who gamble by blocking the dopamine reward system in the brain. However, this can only be used in a specialist setting. It's not normally used first line. It will be after talking therapy, CBT had not worked, and it really needs more research in this area. The only other thing to say is affected others, they also benefit from CBT. And also, once into a support system, there really is lots of options. So women sometimes want women-only groups, young people want young person group, they might meet online, they might want to meet face-to-face. All of that detail gets worked out once they've been referred into the system.
That's really useful to have a detailed idea of what will happen. And everyone goes off to treatment very optimistically, but we see it time and time again. People who are trying, for example, to give up smoking often have several false starts before they fully give up. Is that also the case with gambling, and how can that be supported?
people who suffer with gambling harms often present quite late. It's hidden addiction. Often it is when they really have become exposed because they've got no money, or they've sold the house, or they are really mentally or physically unwell. So when they seek help, what we found is that they are really desperate to get better. So it is getting in there quickly. If someone comes to you and you identify them, please refer them that day, because unfortunately, if there's any gap, then they will relapse, because that gives them time to go and gamble again. They win money and they feel euphoric, and you've lost that window of opportunity. So I think, yes, it's a very difficult addiction, but often because they present late, they are in need of help. So if you refer them as soon as you can into a service, and in general, the services pick them up that day or within that week, certainly, and give them case management and get them into treatment. The other thing to mention is that we have a workforce of social prescribers, and they are extremely helpful in helping with all the harms that come with someone related to maybe their social situation. So debt, housing, being lonely, finding support networks in the local area so that they've got alternatives to gambling, because that's all they've filled their spare time with. So I think it's giving lots and lots of care and support to these individuals, not necessarily at primary care level, but getting them into the service that can do that as quickly as possible.
Yes, absolutely. There's been lots of things you've said through this podcast and the last one, where I've thought, yeah, social prescribers would be really useful here. So in these two podcasts, we tried to talk about what an average GP might be able to do within all the limitations that we face. But if this course and the e-learning modules and the podcasts have piqued someone's interest and they want to think about developing more skills in the area, what else could they do?
There is now a gambling harms hub on the Royal College of GP website. And I would advise anyone that's been inspired by this conversation to go and have a look at that hub. And they will be able to find some resources. But interestingly, a document called The Capabilities in Addressing Gambling Harms. And this is a curriculum written for primary care. It has 7 capabilities. The first being just raising awareness of gambling and its harms. And I've certainly used that within the practice, in practice learning time, to talk to everyone in the team about gambling and its harms. And it's really interesting because it touches everyone's lives. Like, nearly everyone has gambled, whether it's a lottery ticket or whether they've been to the races, you know, as a social occasion, or actually they do know someone within their inner circle that is gambling. So it is really good to talk about it, because once people start talking about it and it becomes normal, it stops being a hidden addiction. So what you'll find with the 7 capabilities is just that. It's about raising awareness. And then as you go up, I think capability 2 and 3 are mainly more to do with identifying and assessing, which we've talked about during this podcast, all the way up to capability 7, which would be someone who is interested in commissioning of services for treating those suffering gambling harms. Another area or arm of this work is also looking at practice accreditation. This is being worked on currently, but the idea would be that there is a gambling champion, if not in your practice, in your PCN, who would be responsible for raising awareness within the PCN across all healthcare professionals. And in part of that would be a resource to display a poster in the waiting room or in the window of the practice, just to let people know that, look, we are aware of this as a problem and we want to help you. So talk to us. Then also another important part of the accreditation is also being able to work and look after your own workforce, because I think what I've learned from all my work in this area is that gambling can touch anyone's life, whoever you are, whatever your job, whatever gender you are.
Thank you very much. I think that's all we've got time for today, and I'd like to say a big thank you to Dr. Emma Ryan for joining us to discuss some of the harms caused by gambling. If you haven't already, please do the e-learning modules to learn more about this area. Thank you very much for listening. And if you enjoyed this RCGP podcast, then please have a look at the e-learning website to find others on a variety of subjects. Thank you and goodbye.